Okay, yeah, my name's Stephen Ellis. I'm here with several different hats on. Aside from running my own company, I work with IBM in New Zealand as a technical team lead of their service delivery team. And through that, I'm also part of one of their global architecture groups for delivery, helping define how to best deliver Linux across enterprise accounts globally. So, first, a quick overview of what we're going to talk about this morning. And the big focus is how should we all be delivering Linux to the enterprise? And there's a lot more to it than just simply delivering it. Ideally, we want to provide proper management of the environment. We're not here just to build and walk away. And whilst the focus is on large-scale enterprise, hopefully some of what I'll cover today is applicable across the SMB, SME environment, especially in this part of the world. We're going to take a look at how we need to approach open source versus proprietary solutions in the enterprise. We've got to be flexible. Companies have existing proprietary solutions. And we'll cover a couple of case studies, customers and accounts I've worked with over the years, why various decisions were made, and what we came up with in the end, and what didn't work. So what are our aims when we're looking at delivering Linux within the enterprise? This is where we cover our three R's. Reliability, enterprise customers want a stable, solid environment. Repeatability, we want to keep rolling the same things out, but we don't want to keep reinventing what we're doing. So if we can build almost a cookie cutter approach, we can just keep delivering services and solutions out to our enterprise customers. And reproducible, with a good provisioning model and solid configuration management, we can always return a system to its to a known state. And it does greatly simplify system recovery. A lot of the accounts we manage, we don't actually need to back up Linux systems. We can recover, rebuild them far faster than we'd ever find our backup tapes. And the S in 3Rs is scalable. It's important that we produce a solution that's cost-effective and scalable across a large accounts. So when we come at looking at delivering and managing a Linux environment, these are the important points we need to cover off. All too often, I've been called in to assist or analyze an enterprise account and found that they think that they're managing their environment and they're actually only covering about two or three of these items. They ignore the rest. They don't feel it's applicable to their environment. And that's where they often end up getting themselves into trouble. And when it comes down to where we produce the solution, whether it's from the open source space or looking at the proprietary solutions out in the market, we've got to take a pragmatic approach because free software isn't always the cheapest solution that we can deliver. And that the open source idealism can cause issues in the enterprise. And sadly also the notion of free causes issues in the enterprise. Enterprise accounts wonder why they're paying so much to implement free software, when often it may be cheaper for them to go and put in a proprietary solution from a large vendor. Also, they've got existing solutions for selected components in the stack, particularly in user management and systems monitoring. So we'll start choosing the right distribution. Where do we look? There's the enterprise solutions from the larger vendors versus all of the notionally entirely free solutions, the more notionally consumer-orientated distros. A lot of the choice is often driven by our customer, the enterprise, and some of that's driven not just by the project's choices. It can be driven by their need for certification or support of middleware or hardware. So I've tried to break down the typical distributions out there into three classes. The enterprise ones with upstream vendor support from the likes of Red Hat, Novell, etc. I've thrown Oracle in there as well, given the appearance of their CD in our welcome pack. Community-supported, enterprise-focused. So you've got the likes of CentOS, the community rebuild of Red Hat, which is extremely useful for prototyping. But do you want to build a large-scale enterprise on top of CentOS? And Ubuntu LTS. We've got the community-focused distributions in there as well. And this then leads into certification. With larger accounts, hardware certification is often important. They may have a particular SAN and NAS environments that will that are only guaranteed to work, and they only have support if they actually look at using a enterprise-supported distribution. Also, just around the physical hardware, they go and buy in the latest rack-mounted kit from HP, Dell, IBM. Is it certified and supported? Middleware certification is also a big risk. It's if we go to SAP and we want to go and put a bug report in, they want to know what operating system we're running on. We tell them we're running on Debian Sarge, and they go, oh, that's interesting. Come back when you're running on a real operating system. So our focus here is going to be on those enterprise Linux distributions that have that certification and they have an upstream vendor with a full-on enterprise support model. They also have an assured life cycle and lifetime of the product. It's very hard to put in an enterprise environment with anything less than a five-year support structure behind it. It's one of the issues I've taken up a few times with Canonical in terms of the lifetime they're putting around Ubuntu LTS. It's not unusual for some accounts a project to take in excess of 2 years to go live. That's no use if your operating system has a three-year life cycle. I've also know of a few accounts elsewhere in the world that have now approached their enterprise Linux vendors asking for a 15-year period of support for some older enterprise Linux distributions, because it's going to take them 5 years to move their applications off the platforms they're running on. These are companies that are still working in a very much mid-range old-school Unix mindset, or in some cases actually a mainframe mindset where they're used to very, very long support timeframes. And this is becoming increasingly important, a clear view on your legal liability. If you have an upstream vendor that is providing indemnity, then a lot of your worries in terms of implementation, potential legal liability are taken care of, we hope. But what we're looking at, hopefully, you can apply to your favorite distribution of choice that you tend to provide to most of your customers. So we'll start now with provisioning, what build management tools are available for helping us provision boxes. You have the standard ones supplied as part of distributions that are free, and we can build our own environments around them, the likes of Kickstart, AutoYAST, and Preseed. We've got the vendor, large Linux vendor solutions. We might need to look at an imaging model. And we also have proprietary solutions out of Oracle, Tivoli, HP pushes out actually the Altris imaging solution. So what are the considerations we need to take when judging what's the best provisioning model? What are we deploying onto? Just how varied is your hardware? How varied are the architectures? Are you just deploying on X-series, x86 type platforms? Or do you have to look at Power, Itanium, mainframe? Where are you actually supporting? Are there any constraints within the network environment in terms of how your tools can operate? Can you use network builds within the whole of the environment? Can you leverage things like Pixie, which often can simplify rapid deployment, but also can be an interesting headache if you have network issues? Do you need single or multi-vendor support? Do you need to look at a tool set that allows you to deploy both Novell, Red Hat, and other distributions, or are you single distribution focused? And if you're looking at an imaging solution, will your images need to be regularly refreshed because of regular hardware changes? Your preferred hardware vendor brings out a new range of hardware. How much work's required to refresh an image versus using something like Kickstart, AutoYAST, etc.? And the costs, big deal. Not just the purchase costs or support costs for the operating system, but the cost of implementation, as well as ongoing annual fees for whatever operating system or provisioning tool you're choosing. When we come to patch management, also this covers the addition of additional packages to your systems. We've got the well-known open source patch management tools which take care of a lot of the dependency hell that we've experienced in the past. Apt, Yum, Smart, there are numerous others. You've got the vendor subscription tools that are out there, Red Hat Network and Satellite, Novell's Yast Online Update, and Canonical's getting into this space at the moment with their patch management tools. And as well, the large-scale proprietary tools that are out there that I could just fill page upon page with. Some of them work well with Linux, and some of them are downright dreadful. A lot of the considerations when we approach the patch management tools are going to be the same as provisioning. We have our network constraints. What happens if you've got a network zone where you can't actually connect to the internet or you can't connect to your patch management server? How do you patch those boxes? Again, do we need multiple vendor support? And if possible, can you actually leverage your provisioning tool? Some of the solutions in the provisioning space are provisioning and patch management. And the costs, you know, enterprise vendors are charging for their patches. They've got a support model that requires an annual license fee for access to their patches. And some of the products out there have actually got license charges, per system license for agents. User management. We've got to get away from users just on a box. We don't want local user accounts. We need central user management. There's still a lot of big accounts out there with hundreds of systems where every user account is managed locally. It's ridiculous. When we've got the likes of OpenLDAP, Fedora Directory Server, etc., the big vendor solutions that are out there are often all-encompassing. They go beyond just merely managing Linux. And we'll also look at what degree of single sign-on you want, whether it's simply same password on every system you manage, or you actually need something with portable tickets. You sign on once. You can SSH around the entire infrastructure. But all too often, you're going to have to integrate with an existing solution. They may have their own LDAP. They may be using Active Directory, God forbid. They may have a Novell Enterprise Directory. But often, when you look at some of these existing solutions, they're only a partial solution. They only cover off a few of the bases. They think they've got a proper enterprise-wide user management system, and some of the implementations are quite shocking. The big thing to keep this environment reusable, reproducible, reliable is a quote I've stolen from Luke, SSH in a for loop. How many of you write scripts to manage systems that are little more than SSH in a for loop? There's a lot of good tools out there to do configuration management, particularly in the open source space, the likes of CF Engine, Puppet, BCFG2, other tools in really hardcore development at the moment. There's the vendor solutions that I've usually been less than happy about, but they're picking up steam. And a few of the proprietary solutions that are being pushed that are now finally starting to mature to a point where they might be worth considering. When we come down to security and logging, how hard do we want the systems to be? How hardened, rather? My preference is, where possible, just don't put services on the boxes unless you really need them. Removes the need of trying to harden them. But also, what other tools can we use to produce a secure environment? These tools have all, the first two have matured a lot over the last couple of years. Do you actually need to implement IP tables on every server in your infrastructure? Ideally, yes, but often we can't find out what network ports we need to secure or not secure, and things just tend to break. For logging, and we don't want to drown in alerts off log files, and we need to do appropriate centralized logging. Get all your good log important information to the same place, and then it's simpler to analyze. Monitoring and reporting. What are we actually keeping an eye on? moving beyond just merely systems availability, do your monitoring tools need to keep an eye on your application and middleware? For reporting, do you need to keep an eye on your various trends? What sort of capacity planning reports do you need to provide to the business? And operational alerting, making sure you've got appropriate thresholds. And do you need to do alerting off your central syslog server? The open source monitoring reporting tools have come on a lot in the last few years. The most well-known is Nagios, and Cacti is widely used to do a lot of reporting, though sadly not in a form most enterprise customers would be happy to accept. There's other tools like Zenos, OpenNMS. The vendors are getting in there in a huge way. Landscape has some very interesting features that are a bit like Nagios and Cacti on steroids. It'll be very interesting for the next year or so. Watch how that matures. And the big commercial monitoring tools. Good chances are, if you're not doing a greenfields approach, one of those will already be deployed within a large-scale account, and you're going to have to live with it. And change control. Oh, what joy in the enterprise. Customers usually have their own change management tools, and we know what fun they are to fight with. And these days, it's getting to the point where there may be some audit requirements around tracking changes within their infrastructure. Just how much detail needs to be captured? Does every package you install have to have a CR associated with it and sign off from a manager? Got to be very careful, because external audit happens and people come down on you like a ton of bricks. So what do I do when I come to an account? We're possible free open source software because of the freedom, not because of the price. I want the ability to fix these things if they're broken and tweak them and tune them and modify them. I can do what I want. I've got that freedom. But I've got to be flexible as well. As we said earlier, the user management and the monitoring space, there's odds on there's some tools that are already in use within a large enterprise. And where possible, I like to try and find some tools that will work alongside. Particularly in the monitoring space, we've often looked at customers where their really important high service type systems have big commercial monitoring solutions on. The dev and test systems don't. But we need to put some form of monitoring reporting on those systems. We need to know when they go down. It doesn't affect the ongoing business, but they soon shout and scream when the development team finds their servers down for 4 or 5 hours because it had no monitoring. And don't be afraid, where appropriate, to recommend a commercial solution, particularly for some smaller accounts. It may make sense for them to buy an off-the-shelf solution from a particular vendor because it might actually be cheaper for them to implement, to support, look at how they operate. One of my favorites, I only put on where I need. Small footprint, brilliant for virtual environments. I regularly use Zen environments for prototyping. I create a 1 gigabyte virtual disk, which has more than enough space to run a web server, application server, wherever I'm playing with, because I've only got a couple of hundred packages installed. Also, less patches to apply. Certain packages in the Linux space, particularly in the GUI space, appear to have more security issues than others. And not having them installed makes life a lot easier if you don't need to patch them. And also not having them there means that we don't need to have those services enabled. They're just not present. We don't even need to go in and disable them. And thankfully, thanks to the likes of Actium Smart, we don't have any of the old package dependency package health issues, so if we do need to go and install a particular application, we just get install, yum install, it's all taken care of. Though this is now starting to cause issues with a few enterprise software vendors, which I will come to later. With your enterprise customer, make sure you clearly define what they consider is production. It may sound a little bit odd, but from an infrastructure management perspective, pretty much everything you're looking after is production. You really should be looking at having sandboxes for testing, OS upgrades, major infrastructure changes. You can't rely on using one of your customers' dev servers because their development team are using the dev server for business hours use. From an infrastructure perspective, it's still production. The builds of the OS and your management tools, etc., on those systems should be considered production. So we're now going to drop into a couple of case studies customers have had in the past and how did we approach it. So we're looking at a replacement web infrastructure back in early 2004. Their existing mid-range Unix-based infrastructure was due for a refresh. They had certain key requirements around what had to be supported. Good old Netscape Enterprise Server was their web server of choice. Interestingly, they wanted to replace their test, qual, and prod environments, but not touch dev, because of the pain of disturbing their developers. That whilst the focus was in their web environment, they had to allow for the fact that a later date, whatever solution we put in place, would probably be rolled into their application tier, possibly looking at their database servers, and so forth. They had an in-house operational management team, but they were all skilled in Unix, very limited Linux capability. Hardware-wise, they were looking at putting the web platform onto Blades, but they wanted to support their existing HP hardware. We really didn't have a mixed hardware environment. We used VMware GSX back then for doing some of the prototyping, but a lot of the hardcore prototyping, we actually used end-of-life desktops that were lying around the building. Fairly common. Linux, great, throw it on the desktop, do a bit of prototyping. They also wanted to consider the use of VMware ESX server for consolidation at a future date, so we had to take all this on board. And then it's all the nice-to-have bits. Oh, can you just, and would really like, and so they had a whole load of ad hoc Linux builds they've been playing with over the years on a hideous range of hardware. How can we manage those as well using the same tools, same processes? And, open source is free, isn't it? So we can go, it's going to be really cheap, low cost. Oh, but we want, vendor enterprise support. thankfully, in this particular case, the stratospheric multi-million dollar replacement cost model for HP UX on HP hardware, compared with half a dozen IBM Blades and some Linux, we were cheap, very cheap. On-demand provisioning, because someone had seen on-demand on IBM's website. Wasn't that great? Big thing there was they had a tendency to do sudden marketing campaigns and find they ran out of web capacity. Also, they'd gone through a spate of projects being delayed because they had no environments for them to test. So can we just, once in a while, just turn an environment into a prototyping environment for a project and then rebuild it as we need? They had some existing infrastructure that we had to take on board. All their systems monitoring and alerting was based on OpenView, so we had to install OpenView agents. RPM --nodeps --force is not a way to install a package on a Linux box. User management was considered out of scope for the purposes of the project because there was an ongoing project to implement a wide-scale, enterprise-ready user management single sign-on solution. Real soon now. That was 2004. I don't believe the project's gone live yet. Thankfully, we could look at Pixie as a solution for building the Blades. We had sufficient control over the network environment. They actually did a very good job on their network infrastructure. So we weighed everything up and looked at what the ops teams could do and said, use Red Hat Network, Red Hat Satellite. It actually provides what you want. It's got the tools. It's got a nice web GUI that your ops team's going to be able to use. It's got the reporting that your managers want. It's not, doesn't hit all the markers, but time frames, cost, etc., it'll do it. They went, no, it's too expensive. Because the break-even point was around 40 to 50 systems in terms of management of the environment. And that's not what we were looking at initially for this rollout. And they were rather shocked at the it was additional per-seat licenses from Red Hat on top of Red Hat's annual license fee. So we went away and did a bit of rework and said, okay, it's going to be Red Hat Enterprise because of the need for middleware support. We needed Netscape Enterprise Server. The next environment to be targeted was going to be running BA WebLogic, and we had to support Oracle at some point in the future. Well, along the way, we built a rapid prototyping system using Kickstart. We modified this so that it could do Pixie. We did some post-install scripts that did a lot of the initial configuration and management. OpenView was built into the build process, and we managed to fudge their RPMs, so we didn't do minus, minus, nodeps, minus, minus, force. And we put CF Engine in for doing configuration management of all the core settings that we needed. How did it go? We built HS20 IBM Blade-based Kickstart and CF Engine servers, one per data center. And the build servers could build servers, self-replicating. Lovely. So anytime we needed additional build capacity, we just put in a build server in the same rack chassis, told it to build as a build the blade next to it as a build server, and then take it to the other data center and plug it in, and then we could build a backup build server. And they're also mirroring across the two data centers, all core settings within the configuration management system were replicated across all their data centers. From boot to fully managed operational web server in 5 to 15 minutes. The OS install was 2 to 3. The rest of the time was actually the deployment of their web content onto the web server. And we never needed to back up a web server again, because all important log information was being held centrally, and we could rebuild them faster than often we could get someone on the phone to look for the backup tape. And was it going to scale? So we were still looking at the web space. It was 10 to 20 systems, hence why they didn't look at Red Hat Network. You know, we're not in the 40, 50 system space. It was RHEL 2.1. You know, this was 94, and also, 2004. Also, because of some technical issues with RHEL 3 at the time, we couldn't actually run any of their middleware on RHEL 3. But it's now been extended to support Red Hat 3 and 4. The CF Engine environment was extended so we could do rudimentary user management given the delays around their enterprise user management tools. And we could do rudimentary web application promotion deployment via CF Engine. So we could deploy a web application out to all nodes simultaneously. And we put in the support for ad hoc builds, so everybody was using the same build, same environment, regardless of which part of the business. Today, I don't have any direct involvement with that account, but I know a few people who do. Depending on who you talk to, it's managing between 100 and 200, thought to be closer to 200 systems off that same build server structure, management structure, services across the whole of their business. They're part of a large global entity, and some of the stuff we put in place has now been used elsewhere within their business. So we think we got a few things right. Case study 2.
I was hoping you might just explain a little bit more about that. You just described the build server with two bullet points, and I was just hoping you might expand a little more on it. I don't understand why you needed to have to replicate build servers and exactly what you
Okay, in order to meet the requirements for rapidly deploying an OS image within a given data center, we needed localized build servers. We couldn't have the build servers just in one data center because of inter-data center links. Okay. If we tried to build across data centers, we were looking at 2 or 3 hour build process. That's how fast the inter-data center links were. Very early on, there were worries about relying on a build and configuration management environment for recovery, so therefore the whole replication, being able to build a build server and mirror the build server important data.
So that's basically one build server per data center?
Yep.
Thank you.
Yeah. So that question was about why we needed build servers in both data centers. In fact, they've now got to the point where I think they've got 4 data centers with build servers. And some of those data centers are for DR. And so the inter-site links are a lot slower as well. This time we're looking at a solution for a large multinational company that happens to do a lot of Linux management across multiple accounts. Initially, the solution was scoped to support one particular account, but because of the extensible distributed model that was adopted, it was quite easy to modify this to cover all of our other enterprise accounts, and it's an ongoing solution, and the number of accounts we support with it grows on a regular basis. Big requirements up front around certification and support at every level. Hardware, mix of architectures and vendors. When we go to these enterprise customers, we don't always have control over what hardware they've got, but the enterprise account wants to know that the OS is certified on their hardware solution. Wide range of middleware suppliers. Initially, quite a mix of SAN infrastructure. A lot of that space has been cleaned up in the last couple of years. Often an existing backup infrastructure. And existing monitoring tools were in place in some of these accounts. Full certification across that whole stack was pretty much mandatory for every account we talked to. Our own requirements in terms of the team that developed the solution had to be scalable because of the cost model that was being presented. We needed to build quite a high server FTE ratio. And we had existing Linux partners. Back then, SUSE was still SUSE, and Turbo had to be considered in the AP region. We were encouraged to leverage our branded solutions where possible. And we were actually targeting things like the mainframe, and VMware was going to be quite important. And so low overhead support tools were key, especially on the mainframe. You really don't want a whole load of support jobs going off on 150 mainframe partitions at the same time. Technical decisions we made, as usual, yeah, we're going to go open source where possible. Mostly for not the free reason, the proprietary tools were quite immature. And again, we could play, we could enhance, we could modify. Our own brand solutions met very few of the requirements we had. Again, like the other proprietary solutions out there, they were immature in the Linux space. This solution was initially being developed 5 years ago, roughly. They were immature, inflexible, they just didn't suit Linux. The developers of the tools had come from a Windows or mainframe or mid-range mindset. And we decided to go for a distributed model with a management node within the customer's site that could do provisioning and patch management. Therefore, we had none of the network overheads of trying to push patches and do provisioning over low latency links. So what do we put in place? Well, we had to support SUSE and Red Hat, so we use Kickstart and AutoYAST. A single server capable of deploying either OS. Package management, back then Yum was in its infancy, so we used that for RPM. Since then, we've also looked at using Smart in selected environments. For package deployment, same tools, user management, and single sign-on, a combination of LDAP and Kerberized tickets meant that we could sign on once, SSH around the environment, we use KSU to get root, so therefore all root access is logged against your own principal. We've got an audit trail. Configuration management and monitoring is a combination of CF Engine and Nagios for our own use. We had to allow for that to work alongside whatever solution our enterprise account had. Logging, SysLogNG and LogWatch, fairly standard combination, and some But then we had to look at what non-open source support we had to cover because of the enterprise accounts. Backup predominantly was Tivoli Storage Manager. Monitoring, Wide Mix, they were the three biggest. Virtualization solutions back then, ZVM and VMware. Compliance, as an entity, we required a compliance tool out there to make sure that we were meeting all our audit requirements, and that was Tivoli Security Compliance Manager. User management, a lot of the accounts today have Active Directory or something of that ilk that we may need to integrate with, and a wide range of middleware that had to be supported on our infrastructure. So what's the solution capable of doing? Rapid network build of managed systems. Not build and walk away. From the moment we build, the systems are fully managed. We own them because we've got configuration management in there. And again, where possible, we build systems that can be rebuilt more rapidly than recovered. And the third-party tools are auto-deployed. They want an Oracle server or they want a WebSphere server. If at all possible, we'll try and auto-deploy it for them. That's becoming increasingly hard with the way those middleware vendors are going. But in the early days, we could do a lot more of that. So single sign-on within a zone, within certain accounts, or within an entire customer's infrastructure by using portable tickets with Kerberos. And a minimal install model. Early days, we could actually do it under 120 packages. Today, with the 64-bit builds, we're probably getting closer to 200 packages. We can have a WebSphere or a WebLogic server out there with sub-250 packages in the Red Hat space. But we've had a few...
Sorry, just wanted to ask about which centralized configuration...
We use CF Engine.
Again, yeah, thanks.
Well, we've hit a few issues along... I'll come to that in a moment, hence the issues. One we hit in the early days of 64-bit was that for RPM didn't support 64-bit very well, but that's now been resolved. Integration with some of the newer single sign-on solutions is causing us headaches, especially when the client wants to manage root on our boxes. We're not very happy about that. And Oracle and Breakable Linux is probably one of the finest examples of... how things are changing. Oracle's put a lot of pressure on us to support this because it's a lot harder now to deploy Oracle 10G on a vanilla Red Hat environment. The moment we try and install it, suddenly we have a full GNOME desktop on a headless server with over 800 packages. And the install method, we can't automate. It actually requires a full-on GUI installer to install this product. WebSphere is sometimes as bad. Some of the other products now are getting harder and harder to install on headless environments. So when we look at what we've done over the last few years, will we do anything different today? Tools have changed. Some of the products have improved. Mostly, no. We're quite happy with what we've got. But some of the alternative tools have matured quite a lot, especially in the configuration management space. If I was going to start from scratch, I probably wouldn't go through the pain that I've had with CF Engine for some accounts. Puppet's matured nicely over the last couple of years. Yes, Luke, yes. In the user management space, some of the scalability they've done around Fedora Directory Servers, pretty damn awesome. Security tools have matured. It's got to the point where putting AppArmor or SE Linux on a box is viable. And we're having to look at additional virtualization models, particularly Xen, now that it's well adopted by the enterprise Linux vendors. So, in summary about what you should do, what I think you should do, whatever you do, don't build a system and walk away. It's just a nightmare. If you do have to ever go back and change or fix something, that's not management, that's just a joke. Occasional patching is not management. Go into an account. Oh, yeah, I think we patched those systems 18 months ago. I'm sure they're due for a refresh cycle. And they wonder why they've been hacked. Minimal builds. The less you've got, the less you need to patch, the less you've got to manage, the less you've got to secure. And put in some strong configuration management because that's the savior. The moment you've got to go and put a box back to a known state or replicate a box. Oh, I need a new server the same as X. Don't just image its hard drives. It's much better than just go and build off the same configuration. Just change your host name. But be flexible. Understand the fact that your enterprise customers will have proprietary solutions that you will need to acknowledge within your environment. And just remember your three R's with the little S on the end. Make it scalable. So, any more questions?
Just for a couple of very quick
Someone's asking about the ways of provisioning a system. The other one's pre-seed, which is used in the Debian and Ubuntu space.
Pre-seed. Okay. And OpenLDAP, was that for user management, was it?
Yes, OpenLDAP for user management.
How are we replicating between data centers?
Because of the careful structure we took in terms of the configuration node within a data center, manage that data center, we could just use things like rsync.
Just
really low bandwidth, nice and simple.
You mentioned on the first account that they didn't go for Red Hat Satellite. Did the build servers have the RCNs hosted on them?
The build servers have the RPMs hosted? Yeah, with Red Hat Satellite, you'd basically end up with a node within an account that actually has all of Red Hat's packages forever, OSs you subscribe to, hosted within your local network and regularly updated from Red Hat.
Yeah.
Basically, our own Kickstart servers are an equivalent without the web interface that Red Hat Network provides and all the other management tools.
Yeah.